Good morning to each of you gathered together here this morning. Great, some of the visitors that drove from afar, 3 hours or so away, put some of us locals to shame. But that's okay. I'm glad you're here with us and worshiping with us. You're welcome to come again as you're able. Greetings to you in the name of our risen Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, the one we've already been talking about this morning. And I was blessed by Brother Cliff's devotional there and set an excellent foundation for the message this morning. For 11 months out of the year, our world is little interested in Jesus. Can I say that accurately? I think so. Very little interested in Jesus and who he was. But suddenly in the month of December, the world rediscovers Jesus again. We want to talk about Jesus. We want to extol Jesus. And we want to do that here in the month of December. But let's do it all year round. Of course, we'll slip in Easter weekend too long that we'll remember Jesus for a little bit there. But it is a humanly crafted and designed Jesus. What do I mean by that? Well, the Jesus that society around us would portray in the month of December especially is not an accurate portrayal of Jesus. And it's, let us be careful that we do not allow them to remake Jesus in our eyes as well. They have tried to make Jesus who they want him to be, this man of love and peace and joy, and he was all those things. Praise the Lord for that. But he was more than that. Jesus, the one who was sent from God to save mankind from sin and judgment, that's what he came for. He came to not just give us love and joy and peace, but to save us from ourselves. The one whose birth brought such great joy and thanksgiving and celebration at his birth, and even today. Jesus, the one who drove out the money changers at the temple, calling them a den of thieves. Where's this man of love and peace and joy? What happened to him? Drove them out. Matthew chapter 10, some verses that have challenged me in the past and continue to challenge me. Matthew chapter 10, verse 34, "Think not that I am come to send peace on earth. I came not to send peace, but a sword. For I am come to set a man at variance against his father, and the daughter against her mother, and the daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law, and a man's foes shall be they of his own household. He that loveth father or mother more than me is not worthy of me, and he that loveth son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me." What happened to this man of love and joy and all these warm, fuzzy feelings that the Christmas December portrayal of Jesus would like us to show us? It begs the question this morning, who really is Jesus? How would you answer that? It's a question we need to stop and consider. That's not the title of my message this morning, but who really is Jesus? And I think it's important to think of this as we consider Christian celebration of Christmas in the month of December. And Jesus taught much by parables, but there's another way he taught too that is very interesting. That is, he taught a lot by questions, by asking questions. And I'd like to look at one of those questions this morning. Turn to John chapter 21, very last chapter of John. The very familiar story here, which probably most of us have heard from for many years. And that is, Jesus asks Peter three questions. Three questions. "Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me more than these? Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me? Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me?" There's three questions he asked Peter, so I guess we're going to look at all three of them, those questions. The title of the message is this morning simply taken from that question, "Lovest thou me?" But I want us to personalize this question this morning. And you can put your own name in there. Just imagine you were, put yourself in Peter's shoes. Imagine you were standing there in front of Jesus in physical form. He was in his post-resurrection body, but he was still there in visible form. And he put your name into that question, or my name into that question. Fill in the blank. Do you love me? It's a thought-provoking question, and it has been running through my mind a lot of the past week. Lovest thou me? John chapter 21. I'm going to start reading in verse 1. We're going to get the backdrop to this story. After these things, chapter 21 begins, and before that we have Jesus showing himself to his disciples. Thomas was hesitant to believe, but eventually came to believe that this was actually Jesus, proving beyond any doubt to his disciples that he was exactly who he said he was. And then the chapter closes in verse 30, and many other signs truly did Jesus in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book. I wonder what they are. But these are written that ye might believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing ye might have life through his name. Praise the Lord for that. We don't need to hear all those stories. There's enough written there that we can believe on what we have been given. Verse 31 lays that out. These are written. What is here is written that you might believe, and that believing you might receive life. In the name of Jesus. Chapter 21, verse 1. After these things, Jesus showed himself again to the disciples at the Sea of Tiberias, and on this wise showed he himself. They were together Simon Peter, and Thomas called Didymus, and Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two other of his disciples. Simon Peter saith unto them, I go a fishing. They say unto him, We also go with thee. They went forth and entered into a ship immediately, and that night they caught nothing. So they went in the boat in the evening, fished all night, and we know the children's story that accompanies this telling, and caught nothing all night long. Verse 4, but when the morning was now come, Jesus stood on the shore, but the disciples knew not that it was Jesus. And Jesus said unto them, Children, have ye any meat? They answered him, No. And he said unto them, Cast the net on the right side of the ship, and ye shall find. They cast therefore, and now they were not able to draw it for the multitude of fishes. Therefore that disciple whom Jesus loved saith unto Peter, It is the Lord. Now when Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he girt his fisher's coat unto him, for he was naked, and did cast himself into the sea. And the other disciples came in a little ship, for they were not far from land, but as it were 200 cubits, dragging the net with fishes. As soon as they were come to land, they saw a fire of coals there, and fish laid thereon, and bread. And Jesus saith unto them, Bring of the fish which ye have now caught. Simon Peter went up and drew the net in to land full of great fishes, 153. And for all there were so many, yet was not the net broken. Jesus saith unto them, Come and dine. And none of the disciples durst ask him, Who art thou? Knowing that it was the Lord. Jesus then cometh, taketh bread, and giveth them, and fish likewise. This is now the third time that Jesus showed himself to his disciples, and after that he was risen from the dead. So when they had dined, Jesus saith to Simon Peter, Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me more than these? He saith unto him, Yea, Lord, thou knowest that I love thee. Jesus saith unto him, Feed my lambs. He saith to him again the second time, Jesus speaking here, Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me? Peter replies again. He saith unto him, Yea, Lord, thou knowest that I love thee. Jesus saith unto him, Feed my sheep. Jesus asked the question a third time, Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me? Peter was grieved because he said unto him the third time, Lovest thou me? And he said unto him, Lord, thou knowest all things, thou knowest that I love thee. Jesus saith unto him, Feed my sheep. Verily, verily, I say unto thee, when thou wast young, thou girdest thyself, and walkest whither thou wouldest, but when thou shalt be old, thou shalt stretch forth thy hands, and another shall gird thee, and carry thee whither thou wouldest not. This spake he, signifying by what death he should glorify God. And when he had spoken this, he saith unto him, Follow me. I'll stop there. The opening of this passage, we have this group of disciples, not all the 12, but there were Simon Peter, Thomas, Nathanael, two the sons of Zebedee, and two others that are unnamed here, gathered together. And I would have loved to have been interested, or be interesting to know what they were talking about here. I let my mind run for a bit, trying to imagine, trying to put myself in their place. And I just suppose that a lot of this had to do with Jesus. What is the meaning of all these things that have happened? They're probably puzzling and discussing these things and trying to understand, grappling with the meaning of what this happened. They saw this man of that they had been following for 3 years, who could do all kinds of miracles, and talked about his kingdom that would come, and they were sure Jesus was going to set up this earthly kingdom. And lo and behold, this turned out totally upside down. He ends up on a cross, dead. The end of their hopes and dreams, by all appearances. And then here comes this man again. This man, Jesus, alive in his resurrected body. What does all this mean? Perhaps they talked about interesting stories or interesting events of the time over those 3 years, trying to make sense of it all. But somewhere along the line, it seems like they just finally got to the end of it. So it's like, well, I can see Peter just throwing up his hands and saying, well, forget it. I know how to fish. Let's just go fishing. And so off they go. The man of action all goes off to fish, and his rest of his disciples follow along with him in the evening. And they fished all night long, finding nothing. Jesus appears in the morning, and I would assume by that point, the mental and emotional state of the disciples was probably pretty low. Nothing seemed to be going right. Nothing seemed to make sense anymore. They thought they knew how to fish, but not a single fish could they find. They failed at this, even at the very simple thing of fishing. Come back to shore, humiliating defeat, to find a stranger, they didn't know it was Jesus at that point yet, asking them if they'd been successful. Now, there was a number of you out hunting yesterday. And if I asked you if you were successful and you weren't, that's probably not something you really want to talk about that much. And I imagine the disciples here weren't in any bit of a different thing. Just Jesus asks this question, he gets a flat no. Don't want to talk about this. I spent a good part of yesterday hunting as well and came home unsuccessful. So they came home empty-handed. What no fisherman or hunter likes to admit. Until Jesus says, just try one more time. Throw it on the right side of the ship. And I'm not sure what made them decide to do it. They, at this point, still hadn't figured out this was Jesus. But they did. And, we know the rest of the story. They got this big net full of fish. They figured out immediately this was Jesus. They come to shore with the fish, and there's Jesus with fish already. Now, where did those fish come from? Did Jesus go catch them? Did Jesus just make a miracle here? It doesn't say. And where did the bread come from? But Jesus is there baking breakfast, cooking breakfast for them. Well, what was Jesus doing here? I think he was trying to teach two things. Number one, he alone is the source of life's sustenance. Okay, these disciples thought, we're just going to go out. We're going to fish. We can figure out our needs, figure out our problems. We'll just go fishing and get some fish in here. And they found nothing. It wasn't until Jesus came up and said, you know, this is all based on me. This is my doings. I am the source of sustenance and life. And then follows that up with this bread and fish there at the fire. It says fire of coals. And also, he was setting the stage, I believe, for what was to come next. And that's why I spent some time on the first part of this chapter. He was setting the stage for this questioning of Peter, which is where we're going to go next. So we have them eating together, and Jesus asking Peter this question, Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me more than these? And now, the first question is, what are the these that Jesus was talking about here? Lovest thou me more than these? These what? What is the these? Well, it's probably at least three possibilities, and it doesn't say for sure what Jesus meant here, so we're left to surmise a little bit. But it could mean Jesus could have been referring to these things as far as his fishing boat and his fishing tackle and his fishing gear and the fish and all these items of the fishing trade. could be what Jesus was talking about here. That's one possibility. I think it was more than that, but that's possible. After all, aren't we easily distracted and diverted by the stuff and things of this life? No matter how necessary they are, we can be so easily distracted from following Jesus, from loving Jesus. We can do that. We get so busy, we wake up in the morning, there's a schedule with this and this and this to be done. We've got evening plans, and the hustle and bustle of life, we can soon forget to love Jesus and get distracted from it. In the parable of the sower, Jesus talked about the seed that fell among thorns, and it was choked out by the cares and riches and pleasures of this life. Yeah, that's us, isn't it? That's us. That's me. We're so easy and so prone to do that. So Jesus rightfully could have been asking Peter, do you love these things more than me? And he asks you and me the same question. Can you again put yourself in Peter's shoes here and imagine Jesus asking you that question? How many of those things are you willing to give up? I could name some things, but maybe I'll just leave that hang and let you think about that. What of your things am I willing to give up if Jesus would ask me to do that? Do you love me more than these? You know, how important is our stuff to us? You say, oh, we're stewards of it, it's God's. Yeah, that's correct in a theological sense. But do you actually believe that? I had to think of the example of the Russian Mennonites in the period when their stuff was under attack, and some of them, and I want to make careful to note this, that it was a small minority of that group that took up weapons to defend their stuff. Many did not. Many were horrified by that. But many paid the price for the small minority that did that. But they thought their stuff was worth defending. Jesus asked this question, lovest thou me more than these? The second possibility, what he meant by these, is more than these other disciples. Do you love me more than you love these other men that are with us? We spent all this time, all these 3 years together. Do you love me more than the people around you? And again, I can see Jesus asking me that question, asking you that question. We can let other people get in the way of our love for Jesus. Luke 14:26, if any man come to me and hate not his father and mother and wife and children and brethren and sisters, yea, and his own life also, he cannot be not my disciple. So Jesus is recognizing that potential of other people getting in the way of my love for Jesus. If Jesus is asking you that question or me that question, how would I answer that? Do you love me more than all the other people around you? It's a sobering question. We do not face overt persecution today, but I do believe we face an insidious, subtle pressure from Christianity that we don't need to take life so seriously. He didn't mean everything so seriously and so literal. Just enjoy what the world has to offer and serve Jesus at the same time. It's a very subtle, I don't want to call it persecution, but it is a very subtle and serious pressure that we face. We face derision and mockery from the worldly wise people who know so much more than what we do. And probably in some ways they actually do know much more than we do. A third possibility is that Jesus was indirectly reminding Peter of his previous boast in Matthew 26. And you can turn to that if you want to, if you care to. Matthew 26:33. We have Peter making this declarative statement. Jesus had just finished in verse 31 saying, All ye shall be offended because of me this night, for it is written, I will smite the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock will be scattered abroad. But after I am risen again, I will go before you into Galilee. Peter answered and said unto him, though all men shall be offended because of thee, yet will I never be offended. But then he went on to do just that, didn't he? And I think Jesus possibly was also reminding him of this boast And Peter's probably remembered the three times he denied Jesus. And then Jesus asked him these three times, "Do you actually love me?" This passage has sometimes been called the restoration of Peter. Before Peter was ready to be that great warrior of the gospel in the book of Acts, Jesus had to prepare his heart and to ask these questions, to search him out. Do you love me? Peter, do you love me? Peter, do you love me? Put your own name in there. What is love? Jesus is saying here, do you love me? What is love? How much is gold worth today? Who wants to estimate the value of this 3-inch double eagle? Anyone want to estimate the value of this? Okay. I guess this morning is the morning for question and answer and for object lessons. Any other ideas? I paid $20 for it on eBay. Who wants to estimate the value of this? This is a genuine $50 gold piece. Okay? This is worth, I think, by my calculations, right now about $4,400. It's this little thing compared to this big one. Whatever God made, Satan likes his counterfeits. He likes the big and flashy things, the things that grab our attention. But they're not worth anything. Okay, I paid a little bit for this. I told you I paid $20 for it. Just to prove a point. But he likes to distract us with these things. And we can easily miss the real thing. Now, if you look closely, the color, this is not the color of gold. But you don't think about that until you see the real thing right beside it. What God hath made, Satan hath made inferior duplicates of it, just like love. Satan has made an inferior duplicate of that. And the love that Satan wants to show us and wants to point us toward, and the world just so willingly tries to push us that way, is this thing of love that is self-serving, that is about me, is about you accepting me just the way I am. It's about me feeling good and so forth. I think you know what I'm talking about. Love is one of those things. What is the real thing? What is the real thing? What is love? Other than the power of God himself, I think love is probably one of the most powerful and strongest forces on the globe. You agree with me on that? Think about it. Love is probably one of the most strongest and most powerful forces on the globe. What we love drives what we do, and that has caused a lot of blessings in this life and has caused a lot of strife and conflict. What is love? Is it a chemical reaction in the brain? Is that something you have that your brain is chemically reacts to? Is it something I have no control over? Can I buy it on Amazon? Well, I would argue this morning that love is primarily a choice of our will. If it was not, this teaching of Jesus would make no sense. Because Jesus is obviously teaching something that we are capable of doing. We are capable of choosing to love Jesus. This is a choice of the will. The old thing about falling in love, well, yes, feelings and so forth can cloud that over, but it is ultimately a choice. And there are different kinds of love. There's a familial love, love of family. There's platonic love, which is love of friend to friend. There's romantic love, think of marital love between a husband and wife. There is self-love, no further explanation needed, we know what that is. There is guest love, as a host to a guest or a visitor. And there is divine love, unmerited, unconditional love. Which of those is Jesus referring to here? And there may be more different types of love, but that's some that wise people have decided are the six main types of love. Which love is Jesus referring to? Well, obviously he's referring to, I believe, the divine love here. And probably about now you expect me to launch into the traditional agape versus phileo love and follow that all down through here. That this passage is supposed to illustrate. I don't believe that's what Jesus was teaching here at all. And furthermore, a word study of those two words does not hold up. If you isolate the study of the love as the Greek word agape as translated love and the Greek word phileo as translated love, if you isolate them to this passage, that traditional teaching makes sense. But if you spread that out and look how those words are used throughout the New Testament, that falls apart. I'll give you a couple examples here. John 3:19, and this is the condemnation, that light has come into the world and men loved darkness rather than light because their deeds were evil. That word loved there, men loved darkness rather than light, that's agape, is the Greek word that comes from. Luke 12:43, for they loved the praise of men more than the praise of God. Again, that's that word love there is the agape version, the Greek word that's in the background of that. John 5:20, on the opposite side, for the Father loveth the Son. That's the phileo version of love. John 16:27, for the Father himself loveth you because you have loved me. Again, that's the phileo love, which is supposed to be a lesser love. See, this is the teaching that's out there, that the agape love is divine love, it's God's love. Phileo love is kind of love more like a friend to a friend. That's not really correct, I don't believe, if you do a word study of the New Testament. And actually, I've never thought that made sense to follow that down through this passage. There is actually some that would say, and I haven't studied this enough to say that I agree with this yet or not, that it is actually the opposite. The agape is the common form of love back in that culture, and the phileo love is actually the one that's kind of the deeper love. And if you read this passage with that in mind, to me it actually makes a lot more sense. So when Jesus asked these questions, Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me more than these? The first one was the agape version. Now let's remember, let's think about this. This is the common. This is just the everyday form of love. Let's just follow this through here. Peter answers with the phileo love. Lord, you know I love you. It's deeper than what you're asking me. Verse 16, the same thing is repeated. Jesus asked the agape version. Peter answers in the phileo version. The third question, Jesus switches to the phileo word, and Peter again answers in the phileo word of love. Jesus asks the general sense of love, and then the third time he gets more intense with this. Peter, you know, do you really, really love me? And that's when Peter really was grieved. And I suppose those of you that are married probably can translate this into a conversation with you and your spouse. I can ask my wife, you know, do you love me? Do you love me? But if I could get persistent, do you really love me? Then we start to get worried. What's going on here? It seems to me that Jesus, you know, asked those two questions, and then the third time is, do you really love me? Do you really love me? So I don't believe this passage is Jesus teaching about different types and kinds of love, but I think it's a question directly to you and directly to me about where is my love? Where is it? What is Jesus teaching us in this passage? Several things. And that is, number one, and these are not in any particular order, but love for Jesus, for the Christian, must be first and foremost in all that we do. That must be first and foremost. That's what Jesus is asking Peter. Do you love me more than anything else? Whether it's the stuff, whether it's the people around you, whatever it is, do you love me more than anything else? And I asked you that question this morning as well, and I asked myself that question. This was a challenging message for me to study. Do I love Jesus more than anything else? Would I give up everything I have for my love for Jesus? How serious is my love? What have you done for Jesus today? Well, that can be a simple question as simply changing a diaper or showing some love and kindness to a stranger. This can be some very, very simple things that we do to show our love for Jesus. It means making that a primary goal of my day. It's what I should wake up in the morning with. My goal is to love Jesus more today and show it. But too often I don't. Too often I don't. I start my day thinking about what I need to get done and what I need to accomplish, and I forget that love for Jesus is first and foremost. Needs to be first and foremost in my day. What guides our decisions? This decision I'm looking at making, how does this build God's kingdom? Does it point others to the faith, or does it discourage others from the faith? Will it help to keep others in the faith? What motivates and excites me or you? Is it love for Jesus more than anything else, or are there other things in the way? Love for Jesus must be first and foremost. Number two, talk is cheap. Talk is cheap. We're pretty good at being armchair Christians, aren't we? You know what I mean by that? That's a term I've used before. Some of you probably recognize it. We're pretty good at playing armchair Christian. Just like I can do with my wife. She can say, you know, do you love me? Can you wash the dishes for me? Well, I love you, of course, but my recliner just feels pretty good. Can I just love you from here? Okay? That's how we're natured. We want to be armchair Christians. We want to do it when it doesn't take a whole lot of effort. But Jesus is saying love is measured by what you do. When Peter responded and said, Lord, thou knowest that I love thee, Jesus just didn't accept that. He said, what? Go feed my lambs. One writer put it this way, love can only be known from the actions it prompts. So we can't put love in a glass, and we can't measure it, we can't see it. We can't, you know, break down the chemical characteristics of it, but we can know it by the actions it prompts. Jesus said, if you love me, feed my lambs. And I believe this morning our enemy is quite content with armchair Christians. I think he is. He's quite content if we just want to talk the talk, but not walk the walk. He's quite content with that. James 2:15-16, if a brother or sister be naked and destitute of daily food, and one of you say unto them, depart in peace, be ye warmed and filled, notwithstanding you give them not those things which are needful to the body, what doth it profit? Do you love Jesus? How would anybody know? How would anybody know? Number three, we must have food first before we can feed the lambs. We must have food for ourselves first before we can feed the lambs. And that's what Jesus was striking right at the very heart of Peter, because he was preparing Peter for a great work that lied directly ahead. And the whole book of Acts tells the story of that. But he's preparing him for that. If you're going to lead this explosion of the gospel, and Peter was a tremendous leader in that whole aspect, you're going to have food to give. So we must have food. And New Testament church is often compared to a flock of sheep. And I believe that's what's in reference here this morning, is to feed the lambs, feed the young ones in the faith. Feed the young ones. Have I been born again by water and the Spirit? Has your heart been cleansed from sin by Jesus? Am I feeding on spiritual food, spiritual manna? Or am I all caught up in the shiny, flashy things that's all around us? All the things to distract us and get our attention. Am I a starving Christian trying to feed others with very little? To the new Christians here this morning, those of you that recently became children of God, can your friends and acquaintances see a changed life? Is there an obvious change? But that doesn't stop with new Christians, does it? What about the middle age and older ones? Can your friends and acquaintances see too that there's change continuing to happen? Can they see who your Lord is? Can they see who my Lord is? Number four, we must feed the lambs so they can become sheep. Very elementary, but it's not enough to just have a lamb safely born. That lamb needs to be fed so it can grow up and be a sheep and then feed others. Are we doing our part to feed the lambs so that they can be sheep? I saw some of that happening Thursday evening when I was here. I saw a lot of that happening. I saw a lot of little lambs gathered in this building and two other surrounding buildings. And I saw them being fed. And I want to bless you as the Thursday church staff for your efforts. It was a blessing to be here again and see what's happening and see children that are excited to come and excited to be fed. Praise the Lord for that. Let's keep feeding the lambs wherever we find them, whether it's young children or whether it's young ones in the faith. Feed the lambs so that they can become sheep. Notice Jesus' first answer was, feed my lambs, and the second time it was, feed my sheep. Well, in conclusion, John chapter 13, 34 to 35, a new commandment I give unto you, Jesus said, that ye love one another. As I have loved you, that ye also love one another. By this shall all men know that ye are my disciples, if ye have loved one to another. I've been challenged with that verse many times and still am. And that is one of the primary marks of a Christian, by our love to each other. Jesus questioned Peter's love here in this passage. He questioned his love. He wanted to get to the bottom of Peter's heart. What's all there? But Jesus is questioning us with that same question. Those same questions, is he not? He's questioning our love. Again, put yourself in Peter's shoes. Jesus is asking you these questions too. He's asking me these questions. Stephen, son of Amos, lovest thou me? Put your own names in there. Quentin, son of Landis, lovest thou me? Who else can I pick on? Reynolds, son of Quentin, lovest thou me? Okay, I'll stop. But put your own names in there. It's a serious question. It's a thought-provoking question. It's a life-changing question. If we can answer that from the bottom of our hearts like Peter did. And I believe at this point, Peter meant it in a greater way than before, right before he denied his Lord. I believe there was a true love there. Brothers and sisters, feed the lambs and the sheep that Jesus has called you to. Let's kneel for prayer.